It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. Tomorrow, we revisit the Olympic bombing case 20 years on. We'll talk with one of Eric Rudolph's defense attorneys and look at how that attack changed the face of domestic terrorism. Where were you when the bombing happened, and what do you remember about Eric Rudolph? You can call us and tell us your story at 404-500-9457. Join the discussion. And then, of course, be sure to join us tomorrow at 9 a.m. for more. The U.S. Department of Education has a program called Title I. It's designed to support school districts with a large number of low-income students, but a recent investigation by U.S. News & World Report found millions of dollars went to wealthier school districts instead. We have with us a member of the reporting team, Lauren Camera. She's an education reporter at U.S. News & World Reports and co-wrote that story. Good morning, Lauren.
Good morning.
And also, we're joined by Jaquetta Jenkins. She's the Senior Director of Compensatory Programs with the Savannah-Chatham County Public School System. Her department is over Title I. Thank you so much for joining us as well, Jaquetta.
Good morning.
Lauren, you start with this really striking example of two schools in Virginia. The first school has more than a third of its students living below the poverty line and gets about, I think it was $700,000 or so from Title I. Another one is in Fairfax County. And for those people who don't know Fairfax County, it's an extremely wealthy district in area in Virginia. And that school gets $20 million in Title I funding, despite having so many wealthy kids. How can this even occur under the current rules?
Sure. So Title I is the largest, just to give a little bit of context, it's the largest federal K-12 program that the government operates. It's funded to the tune of $14.5 billion every year. And what our investigation found, as you pointed out, that $2.6 billion is actually going to these wealthy school districts like Fairfax.
I'm sorry, repeat that. $2.6
billion. $2.6
billion,
so almost $3 billion. That's about 20%. Is actually going to wealthy school districts. And these are places that, you know, receive a lot of state and local funding already, largely due to healthy property taxes. They have a lot of wraparound services already for the poor students that they do have, things like literacy and math programs, social services, counselors, nutrition programs, things like that. Unfortunately, one of the main reasons why this money is ending up in rich districts is because of the formula which is used to distribute the money. Now, these wealthier school districts aren't actually to blame for receiving it. They just happen to be on the lucky side of the lucky recipient, if you will, because the formula used to dole out this money actually places more weight on the number of poor students in a district than the concentration of poor students in the district. That allows money, for example, to flow to big school districts like Fairfax that might not have high poverty rates. I looked a little bit in Georgia to see if I could find a good example for you guys, and I noticed Cobb County, which is the 12th lowest child poverty rate in the state, but actually is the fifth highest recipient of Title I funds.
Okay, so Jaquetta, how important are Title I funds for the budgets of schools in low-income areas?
They are extremely important. I view Title I funds as an ability to leverage schools so that they can all be provided an opportunity to be on the same playing field or playing ground as other schools are that may have a higher economic status as far as the parents. Title I dollars, if used properly and if monitored correctly, can make a difference in those poverty schools.
So, Jaquetta, were you already aware of an issue in how they determine Title I funding? Because it sounds like if I have a big school where there's, say, 2,000 kids, and that means, you know, I have a certain number of kids living in poverty, that number may be higher than another school, even though that other school has 50% or close to low-income kids. Were you already aware that was an issue?
No, I was not aware that there is an issue with it.
Lauren, sorry.
From my standpoint as a Title I director, the way that the formula works, we have to ensure that we serve kids or schools that have 75% or higher poverty. You can go as low as 35%, but that is up to the school district to determine that, and the superintendent and the school board, if they want to go as low as 35%. But however, you must serve to 75%. So you may want to look at, you know, is it the best practice to go all the way to 35% versus stopping at 75% where you have the greatest poverty?
Lauren, Jaquetta just said her understanding was that you were supposed to have 75% low-income students. What does the formula actually say?
So I believe what Jaquetta is referring to is how the money is doled out from the district to the schools themselves. What our investigation looked at is how the money is given from the federal government to the states and then from the states to the districts. So school districts have a little bit of leeway in how they themselves distribute their Title I money to schools. And Jaquetta is correct in that often they try to target the schools in their district with the very most number of poor students or perhaps the highest concentration of poor students. Usually the way they do that is based off of this metric called free and reduced price lunch, which is the number of students who qualify for their school nutrition program. But the formula that we looked at, which distributes the money to states and then from states to districts, again, takes into account and places more weight, as you mentioned, on the size of a school district, the number of poor students, if you will, versus the concentration of poor students. And, you know, we have had lots of superintendents and education policy experts tell us, you know, it's much better to be a poor student in a rich district than a rich student in a poor district. And, you know, it's important to note that there are poor students in every single school district, no matter how wealthy it might be. But, you know, what mountains and mountains of research has shown is that it's much harder and more expensive to provide students living in concentrations of poverty with a great education. And that's sort of where, from our investigation, this Title I distribution of funding falls short.
So, Jaquetta, it sounded like you were enthusiastically agreeing with Lauren just said. Why is it that we should focus more on school districts that have a high concentration of poverty rather than high numbers?
I'm not necessarily clear on what you mean by high numbers because, again, I look at it through, I'm an LEA, so I'm looking at it at the local level. If she would like to talk about the formula at the federal level or the state level, I would definitely recommend that you contact someone who deals with the Title I formula at that level. I can only speak at my level.
Okay.
At my level, we definitely look at, just as she stated, which I was agreeing upon, is the percentage of free and reduced to determine our allocation that we received, and from there we distribute it out.
What I'm trying to get at here, Jaquetta, is say a school has, like I said, 2,000 students, and 200 of them are within the poverty range. That's not a really high percentage, but it may be more students than a very small school that has a higher percentage of concentrated poverty. What difference do you see that might make in a school? If there's a school in a very poor district where a large number of the kids are poor, what difference does that make to how the school operates and the unique challenges for that school?
Well, again, I can only speak through the lenses of an LEA, a local education agency. And so from what I can interpret what you're saying is that number, if a district is a large district, it is reasonable that their poverty students may stretch among a larger geographic area. If you are a smaller district, then it makes sense that you will only have, some districts only have one middle, one high, one elementary, and the entire district is Title I.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's almost comparing, you know, 1 million to 1,000. It still has to go down to looking at the individual percentages by school and by state.
Right. That is Jaquetta Jenkins. She's the Senior Director of Compensatory Programs with Savannah-Chatham County Public School System. Her department is over Title I. Jaquetta, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
We are still joined by Lauren Camera of U.S. News and World Report. She co-authored this investigation into school districts getting millions in Title I funding, even though they don't have a larger percentage of poor students. Lauren, what difference does that make? And you guys interviewed a number of principals at some of these schools that still, they barely have enough money to pay salaries for their teachers while they're competing with wealthier districts for these Title I dollars. So what difference does it make when Title I funds are appropriated in the way that they currently are?
Yeah, in some instances, it makes all the difference in the world. A lot of these smaller, relatively small, but very poor school districts that we did speak to, as you mentioned, are starved for funding in some cases. They are hemorrhaging teachers in some cases because they can't afford to provide good health benefits. And in some cases, some of them haven't been able to follow through with teacher salary increases that they've promised over a number of years. A lot of Title I funding is used for teacher salaries, and that means everything for some of the students in these school districts. If you have great teachers, you can have a great education system. And then in, you know, some other cases, there's no funding available for wraparound services, things like literacy and math programs for students who are falling behind, ensuring good technology and computer labs. So this money for some school districts can make all the difference in the world.
So what would it take to change this? It sounds almost as though, and I could be mischaracterizing it, but it's almost as though this is an unintended consequence.
So absolutely.
What would it require to change the way the formula works?
Yeah, this is very much an unintended consequence. And I think it's important to also point out that the funding has been better targeted since it was first. Since this program is, you know, has been in place since 1965, since the federal education law was first created under President Johnson. So this program has been in existence for a while, and it is important to note that it's gotten better and better at targeting poor students, but it still, as we found, egregiously misplaces some money. And there have been a lot of attempts to try and change this formula. It's just the way that formulas work, and it doesn't even have to do with this one in particular. It's just very politically challenging to change a formula. What you would need to do to change this formula is get Congress to agree on a new formula for distributing the funds. And as you might know, Congress just rewrote No Child Left Behind, and we have a new education law. It's called the Every Student Succeeds Act. And there were some lawmakers who did try to change the formula during that passage of the law at the end of last year. Unfortunately, they failed. If you think of it from a legislative point of view, a formula doesn't mean changing a formula doesn't mean new funds are added to the pot. It means that the funds are shifted. So some areas that get a lot of money under a new formula will get less money, and those that maybe don't get a lot of money now might get more. So it's a politically difficult argument to make, even if you are a lawmaker who can morally understand that this is not good for the majority of America's students. If your district is going to get less money because of a formula change.
Right. And in some cases, millions.
Yes.
I mean, when you say less money,
millions
of dollars. The school that we discussed earlier, we're talking about a difference in $20 million.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, even if you can see that this is the morally the right thing to do, it's very hard politically to go back to your constituents and say, hey, I'm going to get less money for your school district. It's really hard.
But how do we know that this legislation and these funds were intended to target schools with high concentrations of poverty rather than schools that had a large number of poor students?
Well, they weren't originally designed necessarily to target concentrations, rather just to ensure that poor students have equal access to education as wealthier students. This was sort of the brainchild of LBJ, who himself grew up in a very poor rural part of Texas, who knew that this needed to be part of the civil rights movement, that poor students were not receiving the same education as wealthy students. And so that was the original intent behind the idea. As, you know, time has progressed, the formula has changed more and more. And today, this is what we are left with. But as I mentioned, mountains and mountains of research really has shown that it's much harder and more expensive to provide students living in concentrations of poverty with a great education. So this is not to say that, you know, there are, as I mentioned, you know, there are poor students in every single school district, and that's why changing this formula is so complicated, because even the wealthy school districts have come to depend on that Title I money. The school district that we visited in Fairfax, Virginia, which is one of the wealthiest counties in the entire country, happened to be a school district where more than 75% of students in that school are poor. And also, more than 75% of them speak their first language is a language other than English. Mm. So Title I money for them is really, really important, even though they are part of this very wealthy school district.
That is Lauren Camera. She's an education reporter for U.S. News and World Reports. Thank you so much. This report on Title I education you can find in the paper. You can also find a link at gppnews.org. Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you.
That's our show for today, but we want to hear about your neighborhood school. How do you see funding going for your school? Does your school have the funds it needs? Should we as Americans take a closer look at how our tax dollars are allocated to schools? Call us at 404-500-9457. You can find us on Twitter as well, at OSD Talk, or post to Facebook. For today, that is On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headley. Have a great day.